The soul should remain closed then, without cares or afflictions. For he who entered the room of his disciples bodily, while the doors were closed, without their knowing how this was possible, and gave them peace, will enter the soul spiritually without its knowing how or using any effort of its own, once it has closed the doors of the intellect, memory, and will to all apprehensions. And he will fill them with peace descending upon them, as the prophet says, like a river of peace. In this peace, he will remove all the misgivings, suspicions, and disturbances, the darknesses that made the soul fear it have gone astray. The soul should persevere in prayer and should hope in the midst of nakedness and emptiness, for its blessings will not be long in coming. Chapter 4, Book 3. The second kind of positive harm possible from knowledge in the memory is due to the devil. He has tremendous influence in the soul by this means, for he can add to its knowledge other forms, ideas, and reasonings, and by means of them move it to pride, avarice, anger, envy, and insert unjust hatred, vain love, and many kinds of delusions. Moreover, he usually so impresses images on the fantasy that the false ones seem true and the true seem false. And finally, all the greatest definitions and evils that he produces in the soul enter through the ideas and discursive acts of the memory. If the memory is darkened as to all this knowledge and annihilated through oblivion, the door is closed entirely to this kind of diabolical harm, and the soul is liberated from these evils, and that is a wonderful blessing. The devil is unable to do anything in the soul save through the operations of its faculties, and principally by means of this knowledge, because almost all the activity of the other faculties depends upon its knowledge. If the memory is annihilated concerning this knowledge, the devil is powerless, for he finds no means of getting his grip on the soul, and consequently can do nothing. I should like spiritual persons to have full realization of how many evils the devils cause in souls that make use of their memories, of how much sadness, affliction, vain and evil joy from both spiritual and worldly thoughts these devils occasion, and of the number of impurities they leave rooted in the spirit. They also seriously distract these souls from the highest recollection, a recollection which consists in the concentration of all the faculties on the incomprehensible good, and the withdrawal of them from all apprehensible things. For these apprehensible things are not a good that is beyond comprehension. Although the good derived from this void is not as excellent as that arising from the application of the soul to God, by the mere fact that it liberates us from a lot of sorrow, affliction, and sadness, over and above imperfections and sins, it is an exceptional blessing. Chapter 5 of Book 3. The third kind of evil engendered by the natural apprehensions of the memory is privation. These apprehensions can be an impediment to moral good and deprive one of spiritual good. An explanation of how these apprehensions are a hindrance to moral good demands a precise idea of moral good. Moral good consists in the control of the passions and the restriction of the inordinate appetites. The result for the soul is tranquility, peace, repose, and moral virtue, which is the moral good. The soul is incapable of truly acquiring the control of the passions and the restrictions of the inordinate appetites without forgetting and withdrawing from the sources of these emotions. Disturbances never arise in a soul unless through the apprehensions of the memory. When all things are forgotten, nothing disturbs the peace and stirs the appetites. As the saying goes, what the eye does not see, the heart does not want. We have experience of this all the time. We observe that as often as a person begins to think about some matter, he is moved and aroused about it according to the kind of apprehension. If the apprehension is bothersome and annoying, he feels sadness or hatred. If agreeable, he will experience a desire and joy. Accordingly, when the apprehension is changed, agitation necessarily results. Thus, he will sometimes be joyful, at other times sad. Now he will feel hatred, now love, and he is unable to persevere in equanimity, the effect of moral tranquility, unless he endeavors to forget all things. Evidently, then, this knowledge is a serious impediment to the possession of the moral virtues. That an encumbered memory is also a hindrance to the possession of spiritual good is clearly proved from our remarks. For an unsettled soul, which has no foundation of moral good, is incapable as such of receiving spiritual good. For this spiritual good is only impressed upon a restrained and peaceful soul. Besides, if a person bestows importance and attention upon the apprehensions of the memory, he will find it impossible to remain free, for the incomprehensible who is God, for he will be unable to advent to more than one thing. As we have always been insisting, the soul must go to God by not comprehending rather than by comprehending, and it must exchange the mutable and comprehensible for the immutable and incomprehensible. Chapter 6 of Book 3. From the kinds of harm occasioned by the apprehensions of the memory, we can also determine the opposite benefits which come from forgetting them. As the philosophers say, the doctrine for one thing serves also for its contrary. In contrast to the first kind of harm, the spiritual person enjoys tranquility and peace of soul because of the absence of disturbance and change which derives from thoughts and ideas in the memory, and consequently he possesses purity of conscience and soul, which is a greater benefit. As a result, he is disposed excellently for human and divine wisdom and virtues. In contrast to the second, he is freed from many suggestions, temptations, and movements which the devil inserts in souls through their thoughts and ideas, thereby occasioning many impurities and sins. As David says, they thought and spoke wickedness. Psalm 72. When the thoughts are removed, the devil has nothing naturally with which to wage his war on the spirit. Contrary to the third kind of harm, the soul is disposed, by means of this recollection and forgetfulness of all things, to be moved by the Holy Spirit and taught by him. As the wise man declares, he withdraws from thoughts that are without reason. Wisdom 1:5. Even though no other benefit would come to a man through this oblivion and void of the memory than freedom from afflictions and disturbances, it would be an immense advantage and blessing for him. For the afflictions and disturbances engendered in a soul through adversities, are no help in remedying these adversities. Rather, distress and worry ordinarily makes things worse and even does harm to the soul itself. Thus David proclaimed, "Indeed, every man is disturbed in vain." Clearly, it is always vain to be disturbed, since being disturbed is never any help. Thus, if the whole world were to crumble and come to an end, and all things were to go wrong, it would be useless to get disturbed, for this would do more harm than good. The endurance of all with tranquil and peaceful equanimity not only reaps many blessings, but also helps the soul, so that in these very adversities it may succeed in judging them and employing the proper remedy. Solomon, having clear knowledge of this harm and this advantage, exclaimed, "I knew there was nothing better for man than to rejoice and do good in his life." Ecclesiastes 3:12. By this he indicates that in all events, however unfavorable, we ought to rejoice rather than be disturbed, and bear them all with equanimity, so as not to lose a blessing greater than all prosperity. Tranquility of soul and peace in all things, in adversity as well as in prosperity. A man would never lose this tranquility if he were to forget ideas and lay aside his thoughts, and also, in so far as possible, withdraw from dealing with others and from hearing and seeing. Our nature is so unstable and fragile that even when well disciplined, it will hardly fail to stumble upon thoughts with the memory, and these thoughts become a disturbance to a soul that is residing in peace and tranquility through the forgetfulness of all. As a result, Jeremiah proclaimed, "With the memory I shall remember, and my soul will faint in me with sorrow." Lamentations 3:20. Chapter 7 of Book 3. Though in our discussion of the first kind of apprehension, we also gave doctrine for the natural, imaginative apprehensions, we find this division suitable owing to the other forms and ideas the memory preserves. These ideas are from supernatural apprehensions, such as visions, revelations, locutions, and sentiments. When these apprehensions occur, they usually leave an image, form, figure, and idea impressed either in the soul or in the memory or fantasy. At times this impression is most vivid and efficacious. It is also necessary to give advice about these apprehensions, lest they become an encumbrance to the memory and hinder it from union with God in pure and integral hope. I declare that to obtain this blessing, a person should never reflect upon the clear and distinct supernatural apprehensions for the purpose of preserving within himself their forms, figures, and ideas. We must always bear in mind this principle. The more importance given to any clear and distinct apprehension, natural or supernatural, the less capacity and preparedness the soul has for entering the abyss of faith, where all else is absorbed. As we pointed out, none of the other supernatural forms and ideas that can be had by the memory is God, and the soul must empty itself of all that is not God in order to go to God. Consequently, the memory must also dismiss all these forms and ideas in order to reach union with God in hope. Every possession is against hope. As St. Paul says, hope is for that which is not possessed. Hebrews 11:1. In the measure that the memory becomes dispossessed of things, in that measure it will have hope, and the more hope it has, the greater will be its union with God. For in relation to God, the more a soul hopes, the more it attains. And when, precisely, it is more dispossessed of things, it hopes more. And when it has reached perfect dispossession, it will remain with the perfect possession of God in divine union. But there are many who do not want to go without the sweetness and delight of this knowledge in the memory, and therefore they do not reach supreme possession and complete sweetness. For whoever does not renounce all his possessions cannot be Christ's disciple. Luke 14:33. Chapter 8 of Book 3. The spiritual person exposes himself to five types of harm if he prizes and reflects upon the ideas and forms impressed within him through supernatural apprehensions. The first is that he will often be deluded in mistaking the natural for the supernatural. Second, he puts himself in the occasion of falling into presumption and vanity. Third, the devil finds ample power to deceive him through these apprehensions. Fourth, so doing would be an impediment to union with God in hope. Fifth, his judgment of God for the most part will be base. As for the first, if the spiritual person reflects upon these forms and ideas and assigns importance to them, he will frequently be deceived in his judgment. Since no one is capable of knowing perfectly the things that pass naturally through his imagination or of forming an integral and certain judgment about them, how much less is one able to make judgments about supernatural things which transcend our capacity and occur but rarely. A person will often have the opinion that the apprehensions are from God, whereas they will be only the product of his imagination, and often he will think that what is from God is from the devil, and that what is from the devil is from God. He will frequently receive, among other images, strong impressions about the goods and evils of himself or others. He will think that they are certain and true. However, they will not be true, but utterly false. Others will be true, and he will judge them false. Though this, I believe, is safer because it is usually the outcome of humility. If he escapes delusion about the truth, he can still suffer a quantitative or qualitative deception. He will think the small large and the large small, or as to quality, that which in his imagination he judges be this particular kind will in reality be another kind. He will be taking, as Isaiah says, the darkness for light and the light for darkness, the bitter for the sweet and the sweet for the bitter. Isaiah 5:20. If, finally, his surmise in one instance is correct, it will be a wonder if he avoids error in another. Even if he is unwilling to make judgments, it is sufficient that he place some importance on these apprehensions for some sort of harm to cling to him, at least passively. And if it is not this type of harm, it will be one of the other four kinds that we shall discuss. To avoid in his judgments this evil of deception, the spiritual person should be unwilling to judge the nature of his experiences, for the kind of visions, knowledge, or feeling he has, he should be undesirous of knowing this or attributing importance to it, except for the sake of informing his spiritual director and of thereby receiving instructions on how to void the memory of these apprehensions. Whatever they are in themselves, they are not as great a help toward the love of God as is the least act of living faith and hope made in the emptiness and renunciation of all things.